You left Meesho before IPO, but why not wait till post IPO?
The sheer joy of knowing whether I can go and craft something from scratch again, right? To be honest, the risk of downside, the risk of failure in financial terms might not seem very high after you've made a certain number, but the pain it takes on, you know, your self-worth or your ability to think about what you think of yourself, your validation, all of that plays into your head, right? So I was very keen that I don't want to be like attached with some sort of reflected glory. I want
failure, even if you're financial success, failure does have connotations on reputation, morale for yourself, self-confidence. How did you think of that going in then?
I was trying very hard to detach myself from the outcomes and focus more on inputs. Generally, I've seen that the more obsessed you are on outputs, the more unsettled you get.
Welcome to Unstarted. What is unique about this show is this is about you. It is for founders, by founders.
My guest today on Unstarted is somebody who has just started. Well, I guess not just started. Started maybe 2-3 years ago. Utkrishta Kumar, UK, like we call him. He runs India's, I would argue, first and best and largest AI-led finance companion, but I'll let him explain the business better. UK, welcome to Unstarted. Thank you for doing this. Many questions we have gotten, and it has been one consistent theme, that how do you know you're ready to start up? A lot of the backgrounds look very, very hard to achieve on paper. So, and the goal of the show is to really talk about the story behind the story, not all the success, but the pain along the way as well. So maybe just starting up, where did you grow up? How did we, you know, you can probably thread the story for us on your journey, and we'll keep talking about it.
Perfect.
And then of course we'll take questions that have been submitted already.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Amish. Thanks everyone for having me here. I was born and brought up in Patna. My parents both were government officers. My mom was a school principal. My father worked with the government on the auditing side. And like most of the middle class families, we were risk averse by design. So I was being groomed to be, become an IS officer. That's what generally that part of the country aspires to be. I remember when my parents sent me out for schooling in Delhi, my father withdrew all his money from his Provident Fund account because that's the only way he could cuff up the fees. And going to IIT was just probably another risk-averse way to get to a place that guarantees financial stability. So being an entrepreneur founder was not very natural because the instincts that one grew up with was more to be in a stable environment. But it was the journey of, you know, post-IIT working with Bank of America Merrill Lynch for some time, for about 3 years. I was getting to that part of my life where I was craving for autonomy. I was craving for something that was very non-linear in nature. And majority of setups in India back then were linear by design. I also feel being entrepreneurial is also a state of mind. So, if you can be leading a big division in a big company in a very autonomous way, you are a country manager for a setup, that also has some entrepreneurial instincts attached to it. But I do feel that being a builder or starting from scratch is a different skill set.
So let's pause. There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
Now, you said you always felt like you wanted autonomy. Where did that come from? And because that's something, for example, that drove me. All my bosses basically said, you need to become an entrepreneur because you don't listen. Where did that come from? And explain what you mean by non-linearity of journey.
Fair. So I think the first time I tasted a lot of freedom was in my college campus. Ideas were ran crazy. I had never been on a stage before. I could write and direct plays. My friends who are doing plays with me today are the founders of TVF, right? So that was the time where, we felt that we could do whatever we wanted, and we could, I in fact ended up starting up something while I was in college. I would go to a village just outside college to help villagers make some sort of plates which they could sell to the local market, right? So there was this entrepreneurial vibe in the ecosystem while it was not technically
because most people from IIT Kharagpur can't get a job, right? So they are very so
yeah.
But it's very interesting because we have received questions about, should I drop out of college? I want to be an entrepreneur. And the theme of answers we have seen is you don't have to drop out of college to be an entrepreneur. They can become an entrepreneur within college and use that, right?
Yeah.
And your college network has compounded for you later also in life, right? So it's, that's also pretty important, and we'll come to that.
But coming to the question around like whether is someone ready for starting up or not, so I think I'll break it into two parts. The first is whether you are in that mind space to start up or not. And technically from my journey, I've felt that some of these biggest decisions in your life on, you know, which sector to go after, which job to take, whether to start up or not, whom to marry, a lot of these questions, the first answer is more instinct driven. So you need to like calm your mind and hear the right instinct that comes out of you. And only if the instinct is positive, then go and double down on all the frameworks, the numbers, figure out, you know, if it is making mathematical sense or not. But I, my recommendation would be that if the instinct itself is negative, the latter part does not make any sense. So wait till your instinct is telling you that this is what you want to do. And generally, one of the frameworks that, you know, I mean, to be honest, I have found the most fascinating framework, because life is finite, is Jeff Bezos' regret minimization framework, right? And in fact, that's something I used that my leadership coach actually helped me through while I was taking some of these decisions is, you know, you transport yourself to a life 30 years, 40 years down the line. And then you ask yourself whether the pain of failure, when it is compared to the pain of not doing what you wanted, like what wins? And if the answer is that, you know, you are okay failing, but you are not okay not starting, then the answer becomes clearer. Because for me, you know, the trade-offs at least were pretty huge and the opportunity cost was higher. But the regret minimization setup, because end of the day, I'll be in this age range only once in life. And you know, so if amazing. I want to devote my next 10 years, my next 20 years for something, and if I'm okay with that not being a success, then I think you're...
So unstarting is not an option. So, you know, I think you've already answered our first question, but I'm going to pull it up again and then come back to the rest of this. But let's pull it up, see if you're missing something.
Hi, I'm Sainath from NIT Warangal. A lot of people want to start up. How do you know if it is a right move?
Okay, so you've answered it. I love the regret minimization framework. We'll come to it. When did you, and I guess going back a little bit to the question, when did you get that level of insight? You're using frameworks, but you never did an MBA. How come you didn't do an MBA? And when did you get to that level? And then did you build on from there then with all your rest of your journey?
It was not that I did not want to do an MBA. It was just that my career was moving so fast that MBA felt like a lost opportunity at that juncture because it did not make sense. I'll talk about it, right? I spent about 2.5 years at Bank of America Merrill Lynch, and I ended up joining a startup as employee number one. It's called Hopscotch. And started by two founders, and one of them had to leave early, and that gave me an opportunity to step up. And I was part of the journey as startups raised funds. I was spending a lot of time in China, in fact, managing 100-odd Chinese people in you know, a city, building India's first just-in-time fulfillment network.
And so for a kids-focused?
Kids-focused vertical e-commerce. Yeah. In fact, the first company in India to do this, and after that, you know, a lot of startups back in the day came up. But just that exposure of, you know, I mean, being so young into career, not even 30, living in China, managing very senior people, building warehouse automations, getting shipment delivered from remote parts of Chinese factories to an Indian customer within 7 days. So just the thrill of getting it all done was so high that I just was not even like thinking for a second that I want to leave this and do an MBA. The second thing which I think I was very fond of from like, you know, pretty old days. I mean, I joined Hopscotch in 2012. At that juncture, India's startup ecosystem was very nascent. So whenever I wanted to look for advice, there were very few people in the ecosystem who had the right answers, right? And very basic questions like how do you design an org, whether someone should have two managers, what is product market fit? And then I had to lean into a lot of literature from the West, read a lot of blogs, read a lot of business books. And there was a lot of theory that I ended up, you know, I mean, assimilating. And then as those theories played out, the reinforcement made it clearer and clearer. So, I mean, you know, this I've been anecdotes, big fan, high output management used to be my Bible back in the day. I used to give that book to like young managers. And that is where the framework thinking started to come up.
That's amazing. Yeah. So I think, again, because a lot of people ask me and ask on the podcast also, so the learning from this is, if you are, MBA is often very good to change careers. if your goal is to start up, then my view is doing it your way, which is you're compounding your skills towards that startup on a daily basis. And along the way, I mean, MBA does bring frameworks, MBA does bring big picture thinking, but you can learn it. And today in the world of AI, you can probably learn it even faster, right? Yes. Yourself. So
yeah, I think hunger solves all problems. So if you're, you know, hungry enough to learn,
Hunger solves all problems. Very good. So then from there, how did you end up at Meesho? And and then what you're doing today?
Yeah, so while I was in China and building this Indo-China supply chain, I got introduced to a lot of people because they wanted to understand how to tap into that supply. And that got me introduced to quite a few folks, including Vidit. And Vidit, at that juncture, was just raising his first round. And you know, I ended up working with him while I was transitioning out of my current company. And then, you know, there was an offer to come and head the entire business very early in the journey. Again, what I really liked at that juncture were two things. First of all, I ended up talking to a lot of Meesho resellers back in the day because I wanted to understand, like, why is this business model making sense? It's Meesho's first business model, which was, you know, I mean, through WhatsApp, how do you sell? And the user feedback was phenomenal. Like, I talked to people who were selling, like, you know, making few thousand rupees per month in a tier one city. A woman selling this merchandise to people in her network. And that was a validation that this business is onto something. Of course, there were broader questions to answer. But again, I mean, I found customer love to be 10 on 10. And then, of course, second meeting with it. And, you know, I mean, he was hunger personified. He was, you know, ball of energy and really wanted to work with someone like him or a team that he was trying to build. So I ended up joining Meesho early and yeah, I've been lucky that it was probably one hell of a ride. And I was there for five and a half years.
And through the best part of it and through the big pivot away from reseller to...
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, let's play the next question because again, I think part of it you have answered and we'll pick it up with your current business. So how do I know if I've reached PMF? I've been building for a few months now. I have users who say they like the product, but usage is inconsistent. Revenue isn't really kicking in. You have a very clear view of PMF. It sounded like you mentioned that in the context of Meesho. Let's talk about what Ulka does. And let's answer the question of, in your career throughout, with your multiple experiences, how have you thought about this question?
So I've been a consumer person throughout. While the sectors have changed, what I've liked to build is problems that solve for consumer pain points. So at least in consumer startups, I'm very clear that PMF, you know, when the first signal that something is working or not is just a function of what user feels about your product. In fact, I'll go back to, you know, and there is an NPS question that generally comes along. I don't think NPS questions actually answer the PMF in the way it should. So this Sean Ellis, Rahul Vora's framework on, you know, how you actually frame the question where if the product were to disappear, how disappointed you will be, right? So how do you
habit formation,
yes. Yeah. So how do you ask that question? You understand from the user that if your product were cease to exist tomorrow onwards, will the user become very dissatisfied? Yeah. Will they be supremely disappointed? And if more than 40% of users do feel that way, then definitely you have.
And why is it that NPS, which is Net Promoter Score, why is it that NPS can be high and yet not be habit forming? Are there examples of these?
Yeah, so NPS could be high if, you know, your product is marginally better. But generally, shifts happen or big setups happen when there is what Kunal Shah generally says, Delta 4. Yeah. Right? So basically, your experience
you're
changes.
King of frameworks, my friend, more than any MBA. No, but let's bring it to life, right? Quick commerce.
Yes.
It is a 10x experience.
Yes.
And I'm hoping none of the founders are listening to me. But whether it was Blinkit or Instamart or Zepto, if one of them went away, nobody will miss it. Right? So the habit formation is for quick commerce, not to any of the companies. They have not yet built a moat around
that. Yeah. So the question I'm trying to talk about is product market fit.
Yeah.
So the first company that would have done that would have formed PMF.
Yes.
But product market fit is not enough to build a scalable business.
Yes.
So you have to have channel fit. You have to have, you know, market model fit, right?
Yeah.
So does your CAC scale? Are you scaling through the right channels? You have the right business model? Is the market making sense? Because post-PMF journey is equally complex. While getting to PMF is, you know, where there is no specific framework, you cannot, you know, when...
How have you applied that? Let's talk about Ulka.
Yeah.
What does it do? And I know we have had this discussion before. So just, you started by saying, listen to the customers and customer love, but that's not enough. So just walk through almost like a playbook of what people should do and how did you apply it at Ulka?
Fair enough. So the first milestone that we wanted to get to was to, you know, solve the user problem in a very sharp way, right? So I'll talk about the specific user context here and the user problems. So users in India, lending stam is increasing very non-linearly, right? More people are taking loans, more people are taking credit cards. But what is not changing in a similar construct is education around lending, right? So people do not know what makes for a good credit score. People do not know that how many liabilities is it fine to have. People do not understand the consequences of some of the actions they take. And that leads to a scenario where there are a lot of poor decisions being made, right? And this inhibits users to apply and get a better quality loan or better quality card or even get a credit card in future. So while this problem was clear, the solutions were so individual in nature because, you know, when, as Leo Tolstoy says that all happy families are alike, but all unhappy families are unhappy in their own way. So this is what is playing out. So people who have like poor credit health, or not necessarily poor, but they do not have great credit health, they all have very unique problems. So one way to solve for it was that you give an expert, a human expert who understands their problems and tries to solve for it. And it does happen in smaller ways in the country, but they are very expensive and it's not scalable. And that's when the AI wave came in, and you know, it felt like the best solution possible to solve for this problem. So we are bringing a relationship manager, an agent, for every Indian out there who are struggling with any of their credit challenges. And we solve the problem in an advisory cross-agentic way. So we understand user context, we figure out what is wrong in how they're approaching credit, and then we tailor-made solutions, we act on their behalf, we start negotiations on their behalf with banks, with lenders. We can, if their money is stuck in some old transaction, we bring it back to them. We have done a lot of interest rate reduction. So lot of people had mortgages which were at higher interests. As repo rate reduced, people were not aware that their interest rates could be reduced significantly. We identified that and we did that, right? So doing all of this in a very scalable AI first way is where we come in. And how did we go about it? How did we figure out? I mean, we have a culture of being like extremely user first. So every member in the team is expected to talk to users every week. Every Monday morning, we start with a synopsis of whatever calls we did last week. Even before we launched, I personally would have talked to probably 200, 300 users to zoom in on the right problem statement. So talking to users and understanding their frustrations, their emotions, helps you identify the jobs to be done in a much better
way. When you started, actually, let's go to the next question because you've answered part of it and I want to build on it related to AI.
I have a question. AI is everywhere. How do you know which problem is worth solving with AI?
So let's go back to, I want to connect a few things. You left Meesho before IPO. I think when we were having discussions, I do remember this regret minimization framework. And I'm not going to tell how much you're worth, but you're worth a lot of money. Yet you chose to leave. So sounds like you really applied your regret minimization framework. But why not wait till post-IPO?
Okay. Yeah, I think, I had spent five and a half years at Meesho, and Vedit is founder of Meesho. He's been not just a manager, a mentor, a good friend as well. So we had like long discussions while I was moving on. There was this, there was this constant feeling that I was getting from inside that, that I want the rise of another S-curve. So Meesho's journey was a S-curve. And it had reached profitability. And of course, there is a lot that Meesho will do, knowing with it, it will continue to push into adjacencies. But I felt that for me to challenge myself better, I need to, just get out of all...
Autonomy, ambition, more wealth creation, which of the...
It was, just the sheer joy of knowing whether I can go and craft something from scratch again, right? Because sometimes we become too bound with our, there's a lot of comfort zone, right?
Yeah.
It is very difficult to sometimes, take that challenge head on, because to be honest, the risk of downside, the risk of failure in financial terms might not seem very high after you've made a certain number, but the pain it takes on, your self-worth or your ability to think about what you think of yourself, your validation, all of that plays into your head, right? So I was very keen that I don't want to be like attached with some sort of reflected glory. I wanted to go and again take on this journey, knowing very well that the odds of success are going to be low, because that's what the game is, right? I mean, it doesn't matter who you have been in past, the 0-1 journey.
It's always, we say it over here, always day zero.
Yeah.
But say more about the fact that failure, for, even if you're financial success, failure does have connotations on reputation, morale for yourself, self-confidence. How did you think of that going in then? Because that comes up quite a bit.
So, I think I have been someone who has read a lot of self-help.
Mentioned a coach also along the way.
Yeah, I work with a leadership coach, thanks to Meesho. A lot of books I read, and in fact, in my founder journey, I've been reading a lot of Bhagavad Gita too. Right, so I was in that zone where I was trying very hard to detach myself from the outcomes and focus more on inputs. It's very tough to do.
Yeah.
I don't think it is easier said than done, but actually it provides you a lot of mental peace, because generally I've seen that the more obsessed you are on outputs, the more unsettled you get.
Let's come back to AI. So okay. When exactly had you left and started reminding?
So it's been 2 years, 2024.
2024, so ChatGPT was there, it was getting momentum. I remember in our first discussions, it was more, first of all, how did you think of an idea outside of domain? which was, you know, you had done e-commerce many times. And second, at that time, I don't remember as much discussion about AI.
Yeah, yes.
And I know you had some journey. So coming back to the question of, there's so many ideas in AI. Sounded like it married at the right time. So maybe walk through that journey.
Yeah. So I think first I'll answer outside domain. So I think some of the biggest, some of the biggest businesses have been built by power of associations, right? So basically you will always see that someone from one domain applying those design principles in another domain leads to nonlinear outcomes, right? So I mean, and many cases, right? I mean, Steve Jobs had calligraphy lessons and he applied it at Apple. Or, amazing. You know, I mean, even if you look at how Google search pages have been designed, a lot of it is how research actually works, right? So generally I've seen that I think of myself as a consumer person. I was solving a consumer pain point when they wanted to buy something in commerce. Now I'm trying to solve a consumer pain point in credit. So those frameworks are not changing, just the details are changing. So the association power is very strong. Consumer tech, I call it consumer fintech, and actually I'm compounding on what I've learned for last 10 years because I understand consumer journeys very well. So I am applying those similar principles in fintech. So I do believe that it's a continuation of the same
system. I want to underline that because I think it's an amazing lesson. Apple, absolutely, calligraphy, and then taking a very disruptive approach to it. Google, when the first time it launched versus Yahoo, you weren't probably, I don't know if you were even using any of that. It was very different. Yeah. Yahoo was like a browse web, and here you have one search box. So very disruptive, yes. But because they came from different backgrounds. So you're saying domain should not be defined narrowly. Yeah. It should be defined potentially as capability and your understanding.
Yes, right? So yes. And associating two different sectors is where, like, mega outcomes happen. But talking about AI, right? So again, I'll keep quoting a few things which, I think define how I operate at times. So there's a very, it's a biblical line that Steve Jobs has, that the best companies, or the companies are not built tech forward, they're always built user backwards. So the way to solve, even in AI, in my opinion, the way to build a business is not always, I mean, there are very few exceptions. SpaceX is an exception. Maybe Nvidia is an exception where you build a mega company just tech forward because it opens so many frontiers. But you look at everyone who won in, last many, many, many years. So Google, right? I mean, as you said, there were many search engines that were coming in, but Google understood the user pain point very well and applied technology. Before Apple, Motorola was there, right? BlackBerry was there, right? BlackBerry had all that fancy tech available, but Apple understood the right user problem and changed interface accordingly. Similarly, what will happen in AI as well, that AI is means to solve a user for a problem. I'm talking in consumer way, right? So if AI is not solving your problem in a nonlinear way, right? So if it is just another productivity boost where no big business has ever been built on efficiency improvement, right? It is always either a different business model or a very huge delta shift in user experience. So if you're solving the user pain point in that non-differentiated way, if you're like working backwards from the user, that is, in my opinion, the right use of AI. Unless, again, you are building some core models that I don't want to get into. In fact, even if you look at back in the day, right? I mean, we all, when we say cars, we think of Ford, right? No one thinks of Carl Benz, who was the guy who actually invented, cars. Why we think of Fords? Because Ford was very clear that he understood user pain point of wanting to move faster, right? Of course, he understands that people would prefer, and he solved it in a very scalable
mass
way.
Mass production,
Mass production, right? Yeah. So he applied, he was not the guy who invented cars, but he applied this solution.
I guess, maybe I knew that. He
applied that solution in a scalable way to solve a user problem.
Answer to the question is, don't think AI out, think user backwards. And AI, and whether, because AI is a new technology, whether AI is best suited to solve that user problem. And if you're very keen to do something in AI, find a user problem which AI can help.
If a user problem is being solved in a nonlinear way, people are willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
Modernization flywheel starts to kick in. So
talk about that for Ulka. Where did we start and where are we today in actionable application of AI, which maybe people can get ideas from?
Yeah, so at Ulka, we wanted to be very chiseled in our understanding of user problem, which was, they needed part advice, part action, right? And it was becoming increasingly clear that there was a very clear context barrier. Users wanted to talk in their own language, which AI could solve at scale. Users wanted to do voice input, voice output, which users could solve at scale, which AI could solve at scale. And then there was a very heavy context engineering we did, where we understood user profile so well and trained our models on it, that even before the person comes and says hello to the agent has all the context on the user. And then its ability to point out issues, challenges, what to solve next, is where there is a aha moment where, you know, when users at times get startled by some of the discoveries they have that, oh, I did not know that I have this money tied up in that bank account, or I did not in that loan or card account, or I had closed this loan long back, but I did not know that it is still showing active, or there is some pending amount which is impacting my credit health. So a lot of these discoveries and then ability to solve it with just click of a button, because there are agentic plays on the back end that are driving this end to end, is where.
So in the last 7 days, stock market has crashed because people think cloud work will take over. Yesterday or day before, banking and wealth management stocks crashed because, and I think banking because of research, because again, people felt those jobs are going to get taken away, or even that revenue will go away. Why wouldn't Claude or ChatGPT disrupt Ulka?
Oh, that's a great question. I think we are, you know, being very focused in a verticalized way. So, in fact, everything we scale or launch, the first test is ChatGPT already can do it, or has a solution for it? Because ChatGPT has more generic, it's more horizontal. Yeah. We are going very vertical. And second, the space we have chosen is very complex, right? So it's not just advisory, it's agentic place, right? So we are working with bureaus, we are working with lenders, we are working with banks, we have API integrations for the job to get done. So we are not stopping at just a broader advice. We are actually giving a very user outcomes, and we are giving even the advice is very user contextual, right? So for you to train your ChatGPT on all the problems you have, that itself is going to be some sort of a task.
And by the way, my own view is your business is the exact example of how you build an AI where you don't have this threat, because you are integrated into credit bureaus, you are integrated into banks. So the minute you have pipes, ChatGPT doesn't have the time to do it. It's very Indian specific, it's regulatory issues. So actually, I don't worry about ChatGPT in your case, but since you quoted Amazon a couple of times, many people used to say in e-commerce, and you've done e-commerce, when you are starting out, how do I Amazon-proof my business? And I do think that in the world of AI, people should be thinking, how do I Claude-proof my business? How do I ChatGPT-proof my business? So it'll force you to think of the not just the initial product market fit, but the long term. So superb, great chat, UK. I will give you one opportunity to, I have something I want to summarize about you. I came in thinking X, but I'm going to talk about Y. But before that, any advice to give to people who've been asking questions and thinking about starting up?
Yeah, I think over the last 15 years, I have met many, many, many people who wanted to start up. In fact, a lot of interviews that I do today, everyone's long-term goal is to start up. But generally, the biggest drop-off is just, you know, firing the bullet. So basically, more than like 70% of the people just keep talking about it, but don't take that step. So my suggestion is to, you know, first be clearer if you are in it and if you want to do it and there is that right call coming from inside, and then fire the bullet, because I don't think anyone has built the same company they started with, right? So your idea continues to evolve. Again, very recently I was reading what Mark Zuckerberg had to say, where, you know, it's like you're going on a road which has a lot of fog, and as you continue to walk, fog starts to disappear. So on day zero, having a very clear view of where you will be 3 years down the line, what business you are building, is going to be nearly impossible. But as you go through the journey, as you go through the rigor, you force on inputs, you know, you continue to talk to users, the clarity will continue to come in, and then, you know, eventually, you know, you'll figure something out. So,
Superb. Yeah. He's clearly an encyclopedia as well. And very good to hear. I was going to tell people that what I've learned from you is user backwards, but I think what I've learned from you is regret minimization. And I think even your last advice of when people are hesitating when to fire the bullet, the framework you said about regret minimization, think 10, 20 years from now, and which path will be the one that you would regret more. I think that can probably give people the courage to do it. Yeah. So, superb. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah.
You're watching Z47 Moments, the podcast by India's oldest venture capital firm, Z47. If you like this episode, consider hitting the subscribe button and the bell icon so you never miss an update from Z47 Moments.